In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we welcome back Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations, and Theories into the Abduction Mind Control Phenomenon. And she also runs the site intoworlds.net. The book, Chasing Phantoms, was partially compiled from years of journal entries and various perspectives describing personal experiences with psychic warfare, dreamtime programming, military abductions, and harassment techniques. We've talked also about how wireless RF microwave radiation interferes with the human brain frequency and how evidence suggests a highly organized apparatus is set up around us to monitor the etheric or psychic realm. In this interview, we focus on the concept of backdrop people and the nature of reality, an area written about in one of Carissa's articles titled When Everybody's on a Different Page. In it, Carissa describes in detail the behavior and cultural variables that make up a backdrop person and why our reality would have such a thing. This is a conceptual discussion based on the theories from various writers and films that reference the backdrop reality or a matrix program complete with background characters. Is this something that's real and can be tested for authenticity, or is it merely our powerful minds projecting its psychological structures into the environment, making up the script as we go along? We delve into this topic with returning guest, Carissa Conti. Carissa, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, this would be a good time to start off with a disclaimer about labeling people as backdrops because of the implication that they're inferior.
Right. I agree. You know, everybody has their personality quirks and flaws, myself included. Nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. So I'm not talking about this information in a holier-than-thou sort of way. I've just happened to come across certain ideas in life, either told to me or things that I've come across in my research. So it's possibly corroborated some weird experiences I've had with people in the world. So my intent is to put possibilities and theories out there for consideration. It's just another possibility to keep in mind when encountering people and situations in this world that make no sense.
You mentioned backdrop people in your article titled When Everybody's on a Different Page. And that was the first time I saw a reference to this concept. But can you define this idea for listeners?
Sure. The reason I mentioned it in that article was because I was trying to put forth different ideas and theories for the different types of people we're seeing out in the world, especially when they're acting a little strange and they're not all on the same page in terms of their awareness about what's happening in this reality. So one of the more fringy reasons that I had given was what I called the background characters. And the way that I would define this idea for listeners is that, you know, the first definition that I came across was from my brother Joe, who relayed this to me back in late 2001, and which I mentioned in my book, Chasing Phantoms, that this was something he claimed that was revealed to him during one of his supposed abductions. To paraphrase what he relayed, it's that there are people walking around among us who have been purposely placed there by some higher intelligence to function in the capacity of filling in the gaps, creating the illusion of a populated society and reality, among other potential reasons. And the main phrases that he used to describe them were drones and background characters. So according to Joe, stuff, whatever these things are, relayed to him during one of his abductions that only about 3 out of 10 people are real anymore, thus sort of implying that our world is faked in some way, either in its entirety or just in some parts, and at the minimum isn't what we think it is. He had also mentioned the idea of holographic projections, which tied into this idea. So from what I take it, this means providing that you don't attempt to come into physical contact with these supposed people, you're therefore going to believe the illusion that they're real. And it implies some sort of very high-level conspiracy of epic proportions perpetrated by knowing forces. So that was the first time I'd ever come across the idea, and that was my original definition of the concept. And then I later came across other sources that seemed to be talking about the same thing. And the other one I came across was Bringers of the Dawn, the book by Barbara Marciniak. So I'm sure you and probably some people listening have heard of that book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it came out in 92, but I didn't come across it until 2002, so it was about 10 years later. And I know my brother absolutely never read it, but chapter 9 of the book is entirely about the concept of holographic inserts and faked reality dramas being inserted into our own reality by higher alien intelligences for the purposes of manipulating and controlling our consciousness, energy feeding, and disinformation. She says that realities can be constructed and inserted into our reality just like movies. They look exactly like 3D reality. You can't tell the difference. And that the process requires tremendous energy and involves the merging of dimensions. She also says that these holographic inserts have their own energy that can be doused. However, the energy won't feel right.
By doused, can you explain for listeners what that means?
Energy dousing, some may have heard of it. It's where you have like rods, I guess, where that can detect energy. They move and cross over each other and respond in some way to energies. And she's saying that these holographic inserts do have energy that can be detected, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're real. So it's an artificially created scenario with artificial energy, and that it's been somehow inserted into our reality.
Hmm. All right. There are more types.
Yeah. There's this other sort of definitions of this, a couple more. And then, Dolores Cannon was another source. I mean, you have been talking about her recently in our discussions. But she came across this concept while doing one of her past life hypnosis regression sessions with one of her clients. And she talks about this in her book, The Convoluted Universe, is Volume 4. And while regressing one of her clients named Suzette revealed in passing that some of the people around her in that particular past life that they were reviewing were quote-unquote backdrop people. And backdrop people were described by Suzette as being the equivalent of movie extras in our reality, or characters painted onto a backdrop that just, quote, live, work, breathe, and die. They don't have a destiny or personal evolution. They're energy slaves that are moved from star system to star system in order to serve the purpose of populating reality for the benefit of the real people. So that was interesting to come across another source that was saying basically kind of the same thing that I had been told by my brother. But I also have my own ideas, too. I think there's a couple other possibilities for when we're seeing people that seem to be acting like backdrops. I think you have people whose mind and or spirit is either weak to begin with or has become severely weakened and fractured due to difficult and traumatic life circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that leaves them highly vulnerable to being manipulated and piloted by other stuff. And I've definitely seen evidence for this firsthand. And these are the people that I've kind of termed the half-empty pawns. Physically, they're real, but they're not really there consciousness-wise. Their consciousness and or spirit has kind of exited stage left, I guess you could say, and leaves behind a body that runs on its default base instincts. You know, you can go about its daily life in a normal way, but there's no higher spirit or strong consciousness governing it, which then leaves it vulnerable to other forces. So, you know, if you're not governing your own consciousness, then something else will. So I think that's another possibility for a lot of what we might be seeing out in the world. And this actually ties into another idea that was presented to me about parallel timelines.
Mm-hmm.
My boyfriend Tom kind of brought this up to my attention, and he's the author of a website called Montauk.net. So it's a website centering around alternative science, metaphysics, and spirituality. But his idea is that some of whom we might think of as a background person due to how they're acting may not be that at all, but rather they're people whose soul energy isn't fully in this particular timeline. So in that case, people would be filling in the gaps of this timeline, acting as placeholders, but their soul energy is invested in another. And that would be the timeline where they're doing more and have that life spark and personality and consciousness that's lacking over here.
Unbelievable.
I thought that was a great theory.
The non-fully functional person is very interesting because there are a lot of variables that can attribute to that condition. And then your brother, not knowing any of this literature on this topic, I guess you can say validates some of this information.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was absolutely, I mean, if you read my book, which is free, by the way, so if people go to my website, it's www.intoworlds.net, you can access my book, which is free to download. And, you know, I give a little background on his story, and he was absolutely not anybody who would have been interested in this material. And so for him to have come up with these ideas, you know, I do tend to believe that he was being taken by something and something was giving him information. I don't necessarily think, though, that what he was saying was the entire truth. I think I was getting part of the story, but it was definitely valid in parts.
I want to step back for a minute so we can get a bigger context of what's going on, especially with your work, and ask you what prompted you to write the article to begin with when everybody's on a different page.
Oh, well, over the years, I had encountered people on the internet and other places complaining about how so many people are asleep or talking about why more people aren't coming together to do something about the things that are happening in this world. They seem to genuinely not understand why there could be this big divide and why nobody's on the same page. And in one case, there was a woman out there in internet land who felt that all you have to do is put the word out there about what's happening and then organize marches and protests and everybody will show up and that will fix the problem. And she couldn't understand why things didn't quite work out that way. So even in those instances where you have aware people, there's a sliding scale of awareness, which makes it so that even aware people aren't always aware of the same things. So this inspired me to put this article together, discussing in a just a matter-of-fact kind of way about all the reasons why nobody seems to be on the same page in terms of their understanding about the world situation. You know, this way readers would have that list of possibilities to keep in mind in order to make better sense of what they see happening around them. So that was my inspiration for it.
Well, that's a very interesting reason to write an article like this. As some of the listeners understand and realize that despite a lot of demonstrations and people pulling together to create change that they want to see in this world, there are a lot of forces pulling activists in different directions for a variety of reasons. And this might be one of them to take a look at. Now, there are a lot of different behaviors here that you've written about that distinguish backdrop people from non-backdrop people. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, for starters, according to like the woman that Dolores Cannon had hypnotically regressed, backdrop people to her had no real purpose other than to live, breathe, work, and die and fill in the blanks of our reality. She also noted, you know, quote, for you to learn to stay on your path, you have to have these other people in your way, living beside you, but you're here for a lesson and they're here for a backdrop. Other things that were noted about their behavior was that their purpose was to create problems and chaos, try to pull people off their path to help them with their learning lessons. She also went on to say that they've gone from doing their jobs as backdrops to being angry, and all they want to do is kill and hurt and destroy each other and destroy the land. So according to Dolores' material, their behavior is either neutral or outright negative and problematic. For me, I can't confirm for certain that this concept is valid, but I've had enough experience with enough people over the years, as well as what I've gathered from talking to others about this. And what I've come across in my research and what I've put together is this, in terms of behavior. Real implies soul or spirit. You know, they have flaws and faults like everybody, but they're there mentally and emotionally. There's a genuine spark of life happening. You can connect with them. On the positive end of the spectrum, they'll have empathy. You know, they can be reasoned with. They demonstrate growth and change. They evolve. They're dynamic. in my experiences, they're the ones who often see through the BS that's going on in this world, and, you know, they question and challenge things. On the negative end of the spectrum, real but negative people, they also have empathy, though it may be displaced. They have individuality and self-awareness and the ability for introspection, but it's towards a self-serving end. Both positive and negative real people, their motivations are coming from within versus solely relying on external programming, and they seem to be trying to get something out of life. Both are dynamic and grow and evolve, and even if it's towards different ends. They demonstrate self-awareness and individuality, and they have the potential for paranormal experiences. So then you have the background characters or drones, backdrop people, however you want to call it. They're the people that are coming across as empty. Nobody's really home. You can't connect with them. They're lacking that individualized dynamic consciousness that has a higher purpose and destiny. They don't reflect or introspect. They seem to simply just exist, acting on instincts and external programming. On the positive end of the spectrum, they may be nice enough, but they're just bland, boring. And for me, I'm left with a feeling that there's no point in hanging around with them if, in fact, they are a backdrop. They offer up nothing interesting or original, really. They just seem to become whatever they were trained to be growing up and don't display original thought or ideas. On the negative end of the spectrum, they may act robotic, like a computer, behaving in detrimental ways, and they don't care. So kind of something akin to psychopathy. They may be cold or mechanical, completely physicality-based, display no connection to or interest in higher spiritual anything. And they may even seem to behave as if they're operating on behalf of something else's negative agenda, whatever that something else is. So they're the people that are causing major problems and interference and negativity in other people's lives and can't be reasoned with, like a robot with a negative agenda that makes no sense. They're the sand in the works. I think these types are often being piloted or manipulated by negative stuff that works through them. And unfortunately, it seems that our reality is currently tipped in the favor of the negative stuff, though I know many New Agers believe that's changing. So, you know, we'll see. But right now, these negative, irrational chaos bringers are everywhere in this reality, and they always seem to make it to the helm of positions of power, from a minor to big, making things difficult for people and making sure this world is operating as chaotically and unsmoothly as possible. And I don't think that's a coincidence. And in particular, what scares me are the people that look and seem completely normal on the outside and pass for your everyday regular person, but who are cold as ice on the inside, where something is very wrong there. And I've witnessed this on several occasions and definitely have firsthand experience with that. So
I'd like to talk about some of those firsthand experiences. You mention an anecdote in one of your articles when you were working at a hotel, but you mentioned the chaos element. Well, almost everywhere you look on some official seal here in the United States or a government, you see the Latin words order out of chaos.
Mm.
Right? It's been around us for a long time, and there's probably different degrees of that level of chaos that's being perpetrated. I haven't had firsthand experiences like you that I can recall. Maybe something vague, but I have not been alert to this possibility. This is a new concept to me. But you have written down a number of anecdotes from firsthand experiences, which are really interesting. Can you tell us one of them?
Sure. I mean, I've actually kind of classified some of my anecdotes in terms of groups. Like this one kind of represents one facet of this phenomenon that you might see, because there are different ways in which I think these types of people manifest in our reality. I mean, I can try to outline that if you'd like, some of the different facets or groups, if you think that would be useful.
Absolutely, yes. The firsthand experiences are what kind of drew me into this idea from your writings anyway. I wondered what was going on with people around me, but I never knew how to really describe it or look out for it. But these anecdotes really help.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let me think of what would be the best one to start out with. I'll start with this one because I think a lot of listeners might be able to relate to this because this is something that kind of would happen to a lot of people in their everyday life. But a common thread of my own dealings with what could probably be considered the negative background characters is that their troublesome behavior seemed designed to instigate action or change of some sort in my life, good or bad, to nudge me and manipulate the direction things were going. And this would probably be true in other people's situations as well. I know I've heard from people in emails, for instance, who write to me because my website is talking about this phenomenon. But whether it was getting me to quit a job or move out of the place I was living or pushing me out of whatever situation I was in general, some of these incidents definitely seem to be kind of negative interference. Others seem to be trying to create negative energy feeding situations. And some seem to be because I wasn't supposed to be wherever I was at that moment in my life. And since I wasn't recognizing that, the universe or reality, whatever you want to call it, took action through whatever available means. So I've dealt with my share of people who were acting irrationally as if something else was piloting their wheel, from, you know, bosses, coworkers, roommates, landlords, family members, even an ex-boyfriend, where their eyes were kind of glazed over. Nobody was home. They weren't seeing me as they engaged in their strange, irrational behavior, and they couldn't be reasoned with. It was like some other force was governing them, and they were just puppets at the mercy of it. In order to accomplish what I mentioned earlier, maybe getting me to move or quit or just to change the overall situation that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I mentioned in Chasing Phantoms was an ex-boyfriend of mine named Steve, who was a staunch atheist. And the entire time I knew him, it was like he was always trying to convert me to that line of thought. But it was to the point where he was mindlessly repeating the script about how there is no God, there is no soul, we're all just pieces of meat, and when we die, it lights out. You know, just trying so hard to convert me to this line of thinking. And there's one time when he was doing that, and I walked away and left him standing there in the hallway, literally just talking to the wall. And it took him many moments to even realize that I'd walked away and to come to. So wow. He was just like in a trance state, like his eyes were glazed over. It's like, what is piloting this guy? It's, you know, it's, he did not have his own consciousness. Clearly. So that's one good example, I think, that maybe other people can relate to if they've experienced these types. So I think that actually ties into what Dolores Cannon's material was saying. So that's one form of it. There's other forms of it as well.
So this is an example of someone who is not necessarily a backdrop person, but goes into a trance-like state and is piloted
right.
from with something else and then comes back. Once that happens and you detect that in real life, is your perception of that person permanently altered?
For me, it was. Our relationship at that point anyway was dying. I mean... It was already over. And so this happened right towards the end when I was already changing anyway in terms of my attitude towards the relationship. But that certainly helped. Even though at the time I wasn't really aware of a lot of this stuff, this was before certain things had happened to me, before I'd begun my research really, I couldn't not notice that. Like that he was in a trance state. It's like, who are you talking to?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It did alter the way I saw him after that.
Mm-hmm. So that's a very interesting category with a real experience anecdote attributed to it. All right, what's another one?
This one's kind of really interesting, but it's the idea of those that are behaving as true filler characters. Therefore, they behave as if you're not there. And this is a really rare type of experiences, and as far as I know, I haven't actually experienced this myself, but my boyfriend Tom has. And again, he writes the website Montauk.net, and he gave me permission to relay this anecdote because I think it's very interesting. But it happened years ago, and it was at a Walgreens drugstore in Fort Lauderdale. So this was like late 2002. And he went there one night. At the same time, he happened to have a bad headache happening. So he goes in, and whatever he was there to buy was located towards the back of the store. And the aisle he chose to go down to get to the back of the store had two carts and three people creating a cluster obstacle. So it was two shopping carts kind of pointed at an angle towards each other, two guys, and one of whom had his arm resting on a cart handle. So it was draped between the two carts, almost forming a gate that was blocking the aisle. And then there was a female Walgreens employee off to the side. So normally, Tom said he would have gone down a different aisle instead of, you know, trying to go through this blockage. But because of his headache, he was kind of grumpy and not acting like his normal self. And he decided to plow forward anyway. And as he approached... So, which again, this is out of character for him. So he was doing something out of character that this is not his normal behavior. But as he approached the cluster, he squeezed himself between the two carts, which, you know, under normal circumstances, that would have been enough to trigger people to part and move out of the way and let him through. But they didn't. He even said, excuse me, but they didn't acknowledge him and kept talking amongst themselves. So at that point, he physically took hold of the guy's arm that was draped across the two carts. And the guy's shirt sleeve is rolled up too, but mind you, so he's touching bare skin and moved it out of the way so he could squeeze through. But and that should have really gotten the guy's attention. And yet still their conversation never stopped and they never looked at him or acknowledged his presence. Tom also noted that the arm felt like a dead weight when he moved it. At no point in the process of moving it did the guy pull back or react defensively or in any kind of way. And, you know, obviously, this is just not normal behavior or a response, especially if one guy comes into physical contact with another. So he's behaving in an improbable way, motivated by his headache, you know, which results in him going down this blocked aisle, which he normally wouldn't do. And, you know, he's forcing contact with people maybe he wasn't supposed to be. So, you know, make of that what you will. And either the people are really asleep at the wheel or something else was happening there. And I can't even begin to... know if it means they're not real or not. But
Carissa, this reminds me of something you wrote about where you were rollerblading and all these cars were pulling out, blocking your path.
Right. Yeah.
Almost like the Truman effect.
Yeah. I mentioned that in my gang stalking versus hyperdimensional matrix attacks article. It was an anecdote where I talk about how back in Fort Lauderdale, I was rollerblading up and down the neighborhood streets where we lived, and which normally was fine. I never had any issues with it. But on that particular morning, every time I would approach a driveway, there would be a car behind me that needed to turn into that driveway and just kind of was hovering behind me like I'm in the way and waiting for me to move. And, you know, this had never really ever happened before. And then it was happening again and again and again, literally just over and over, like all these driveways. There happened to be a car that needed to pull in. I don't know what was going on, but this had never happened. And it happened like 7 or 8 times, which is just unbelievable. That's improbable. So I just basically gave it up and I went home. I just forget rollerblading. But what I talked about in the article about that particular anecdote was that possibly it's the idea of your own personal frequency being out of sync with reality in some way. I don't necessarily think it's like in the Truman Show or what a lot of gang stalkers believe, that this is some knowing group that's purposely trying to stalk you and get in your way. That just, I don't think that's what's happening. I think something else is happening, and it has to do with the way that we interface with reality. I don't understand fully how it works.
Yeah. Okay, that's something I just thought of with the shopping carts blocking the aisle. You're kind of in a place where maybe it's unpredictable and you
right.
would never have done that. I have to admit, whether it's my own perception or not, while riding through the streets of New York City on a motorcycle even, I come across moments where it seems like every parked car seems to pull out in front of me as soon as I come up to that car. There's no cars behind me, but it pulls out right in front of me. I'm sure
yeah.
it happens to everyone, but sometimes it happens in a row. And you're like, oh, that's yeah. interesting. I'm definitely in
a row. Or it becomes improbable, right? Like statistically, the odds of that happen over and over and over again, it's just, you know, at what point does it cease to be normal things or a coincidence and then it kind of becomes something else is happening here, you know, you can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I might ask you that. At what point does it become?
Well, when it becomes really improbable like that, where you're being forced to notice it, it's just completely statistically improbable. I believe that's at the point where you can't deny it anymore. You can't just write it off as being a coincidence or your imagination. And actually, I have a tie-in article to the gang stalking article called Being Out of the Flow and Other Miscellaneous or Other Random Weirdness That's Often Mistakenly Attributed to Gang Stalking. And it totally it gets into this phenomenon exactly, because I know what happens to people. But sometimes they misinterpret it, and they think it's a knowing group of gang stalkers, or something like the Truman Show, which you mentioned earlier. And I don't think that's what's happening, but I think it's something about somebody's frequency, the way that they're interfacing with reality, and where they just keep getting blocks and obstacles, and it's just things aren't in the flow. You have days where everything's just in the flow, and you're hitting every green light when you're driving and everything's just working out. And then you have these other days where everything is just blocking and obstacles and people are in your way and nothing's working out. And so what's going on when that happens? And so I try to get into that in the article.
Our guest is Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms. Our topic is backdrop people. We'll be right back after this break. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms, about a concept called backdrop people. Is it as simple as when these obstacles come up and you notice the pattern and you're consciously aware, oh, it's going to be one of these days, could you just lean back for a minute and let some time go by and then step out and start doing what you need to do? And the idea that because somebody got your attention, somebody said hello to you in a random, unpredictable way, and you ended up talking to them, you didn't step out onto the road where a car or something could have hit you. Meaning that if you just lay back or lean back for a few minutes and then begin your day.
That's got implications as well. It's like, what is it saying here about how reality works? That if you're not synced up in the right timing of things, everybody else, it's throwing everything off. I mean, what is that saying about what reality is and how it's functioning? Mm-hmm. And that's definitely a question I've had to ponder on, because, especially in that article. But certainly, like what you're saying, maybe you just need to hang back and recognize, okay, obviously, I'm not in the right flow of things. Maybe I just need to lay low. Like I did with the rollerblading. I just went home. I just, okay, forget this.
Well, getting back into the background people, that element of reality, it's something that I don't hear many people talking about. And if they do talk about it, there's more of a positive spin on it. But I think it's interesting that there's so many factors once you start looking at how anyone can be disconnected from a functioning life. You briefly touched on that. And just to go down a few of them, well, people could be in a hypnotic trance from television. They've been lied to. They could be chemically brain damaged through drugs. You've gone through that list as well. Anti-anxiety, prescription pills.
Yeah. Psych meds in general, that's running rampant in our societies nowadays. I mean, you had mentioned earlier an article where you came across talking about how the elderly are abusing prescription meds now, and you said the title of the article said something about they're becoming like zombies.
Here it is. This was a USA Today article from May of this year. Older Americans hooked on RX. Quote, I was a zombie. I was an octogenarian zombie. And no, that didn't say that. But
but it's not just the elderly. It's affecting everybody in our society. So many people are on psych meds.
How does that attribute or contribute to the backdrop person?
Well, it may make it so that you have people that are emotionally flatlining. I know things like Prozac or whatever ones that are like that. The whole point of them is to kind of flatten your emotions. So they may not be responding the way you think a human should be responding. Their eyes may be glazed over. Their responses maybe aren't fully lining up with what you're saying. They're not fully there. And it's because they're medicated. So that's definitely, in all fairness, something we have to keep in mind. And that's why I mentioned it in my article. I wanted to try to be fair. Like, just because somebody's acting weird, it doesn't automatically mean they're fake or they're a background character. We do have to keep these other things in mind. You know, media programming was another one. Just people who become zombies just by watching too much TV, hours and hours of it a day for years on end. What does that do? It causes somebody who doesn't want to think for themselves and who's just kind of in a trance. There's just so many factors that could be contributing to people's strange behavior.
One of them that we talk about on the show, we talked about the television sigil magic and the impact it has, even watching a few hours of television, what that does to the subconscious mind. So that is a very powerful factor involved here. But the not-so-useful side effects of having a personal digital communication device, such as a cell phone, is training the mind, its conditioning, to look for what to be told next. You often see people with their heads down, buried in that screen. And somebody mentioned that the way these consumers are tethered to their phone is essentially begging corporations to put a chip in them. So how do you see this behavior factoring in to become a backdrop person?
Oh, well, it's definitely another factor. Seems to be heading in the direction of getting people to function in sort of in a hive mind sort of capacity. Everybody keeping up with the latest tech trends, having to have their newest gadgets and be linked up to each other 24/7, just doing what everybody else is doing and following along. And it's not just the communication devices themselves. It's the way they now allow everybody to also be linked up to the media, which functions as a mass programming tool, and it's gotten completely insane by this point. So, yeah, I mean, if somebody is already kind of weakened and not strongly individualized, and, you know, and you add in this crazy technology and the media, it could certainly create like a sort of a sheeple situation of everybody being part of this linked up hive mind and the programmed group sync.
And a lot of the marketing done for these devices were out of, number one, convenience, and number two, security. Security out of fears of being unable to communicate with other people. And so you put all these factors together with the anti-anxiety type prescription drugs, the conditioning of television, the addictive nature of the personal digital communication devices, you start to increase the chances of more background people or backdrop people.
Yeah, people who are losing individuality and aren't thinking for themselves and are just kind of programmed zombies, you know, just floating around through life, not questioning things. Well, the media said it's this, so that's it. Or school, it's the educational system. That was another one I mentioned in my article. That is a big one in terms of rewiring people. Everybody, I think, starts out probably, hopefully, with an open mind as a little kid, and you're like a sponge, and you're curious. But by the time you graduate high school, it's like they've completely indoctrinated you into a certain way of thinking and narrowed you down into a box, you know. And what does that do in terms of cutting people off from higher interesting knowledge and concepts?
Well, it could affect your creativity and your individualism and thinking outside of the box a little bit, and to not be afraid to do that. All right, a quick aside before we go into this area about authors and films who reference the backdrop people concept is that I believe that we're responsible for generating our own experience of reality, and we have to be careful about using this information as an excuse to say, oh, forget it, there's all this manipulation occurring, what's the use? So I just want to put that disclaimer out there as well. Past life regression hypnotherapist author Dolores Cannon, who we mentioned before, was one of the first to call these characters backdrop people through that hypnotic session with that individual. And I recently watched a video with her talking about this on YouTube. Her take on it, according to a presentation she gave, is that the backdrop people aren't real, they're holographic and just energy, as we pointed out, and they're not on an evolutionary path. You mentioned this as well, but it gets weird. What if you had the ability to recognize a backdrop person and walked up to one and talked to them? You know, what would they do? And Dolores says, well, at this point, you've given them a speaking role in your movie. What do you think about that answer?
Yeah, I saw that video. You gave me the link. It's on YouTube. It's a 17-minute video where Dolores is on stage talking to an audience, and she's just, you know, elaborating on this specific subject about the backdrop people. And when I heard her say that, like, oh, you've given them a speaking role, you know, in your movie, I thought, well, or you pulled somebody's energy into your timeline that maybe wasn't originally supposed to be there, kind of tying into what I had said, you know, Tom's theory was earlier.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of take issue with how Dolores is presenting things when she says stuff like that, because to me, maybe it encourages the mindset of dehumanizing everybody else around you and maybe believing that you're the center of the universe and everybody else is just a character in your personal stage show. You know, there's billions of people on this planet, and many of them, I believe, are very much real and souled with interesting lives and destinies. I also think there's something to Tom's idea of realm dynamics, which is an article he wrote about and posted on his website, montauk.net. It's the idea that everybody has their personal frequency, and it's like a radio, basically. So it determines what your realm is. So you can have multiple real people, but who may have different frequencies or realms, so therefore they're not going to cross paths or connect. They'll be like ships passing in the night when, you know, they're out in public, but it doesn't mean they're fake or a backdrop. It just means they're at a different frequency or on a different path. So what does happen when you impose yourself into the life of somebody who may be real but is not supposed to be interacting with you? Or is that a completely different frequency? You know, what does happen? Well, Tom had that interesting anecdote at Walgreens where they just didn't even acknowledge him at all, even when he touched them. I think in a lot of cases, though, it doesn't even get to that point. You just don't cross paths with them.
I wondered about that. Right. I think, okay, so we're getting into the area of where, you know, you've heard this before, the glitch in the matrix. And
yeah,
it's fascinating because the hypothetical here is that what Dolores is saying is that, okay, this is a real backdrop person, which is either a hologram or an energy thing. The other individual that was on stage with Dolores in that video mentioned that he had the ability to tune in to the energy to identify a backdrop person. Hypothetically, imagine what it would be like to walk up to that hologram, whatever it is, and to have that validation, that proof, that evidence right there, whether that your hand would pass through this individual or you would turn away or look away for a few minutes and then the person's gone.
Oh, when you're done, I was going to tell you, I actually have anecdotes that relate to both of what you just said.
Okay, I'm done.
Oh, okay. Well, the first point you made is like if, you know, they're in a crowd and you go up to them, would your hand pass through them? I have known some women, like, first off, I have to say, I don't have the sight, so I can't see people's auras or energy fields, but I've known people who can. And I believe it's real because, for instance, I've had several people corroborate, say just different people in different states say the same thing about what they see of my energy and how it looks. So I know it's real because I've had individual people report the same thing. So I believe in it. But some of these women that I've known who are really psychic and who could see have told me that they have witnessed cases of crowds of people. Like one lady, her name was Vicky, and she was at an amusement park with her family. And she can see energy, and she's like, there was people in that crowd who didn't have an aura next to people who did. What that means, I don't know. But I had actually an acquaintance of mine in the 90s. His name was James. He was a part-time roommate in the house that I was renting a room in. And he told me the same thing, but it was him who apparently didn't have the aura. He told me, kind of like with the glint in the eye and a smirk, which I now kind of interpret to be like, there's like almost like another force that's working through the person when they're talking to you and they look like that. But he kind of conveyed to me, yeah, like people have come up to me and said, how come you don't have an aura? You know, I don't see an aura on you. Everybody else has one except for you. And he just kind of said that to me and with this smirk. And, you know, at the time I didn't sort of recognize what he was saying because I didn't know about, I mean, I don't know if auras are real and I really wasn't into it too much, but I look back on that and I'm like, that's very interesting, you know, with what I know now. But I can say I was able to physically come into contact with him. You know, you could touch him. He's real, but apparently he doesn't have an aura. So what's going on there? I don't know. He was kind of a negatively oriented person. He'd had like a very troubled life. And I had evidence in his case of him being piloted by other stuff at times, like negative stuff kind of operating through him. So that was another thing I had on my list of notes of something I was going to mention was people with no auras, or, you know, what happens when you see a crowd of people and some have energy and others don't? What does that mean?
Right. I would ask the question, what generates an aura?
Right. That's a good question. Is it something everyone is just supposed to have inherently? And so is that like a really big problem if somebody doesn't?
So, all right, so there's that. Would your hand pass through them?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I actually have an anecdote where somebody did disappear from one moment to the next. I looked away and I looked back and they were gone. That's something I mentioned in one of my write-ups on my website, in this write-up called The Vortex. And I talk about some strange things that started happening during a particular time period when I started to have my awakening back in 2000. And that whole summer of 2000, just many weird things were happening. And I had an instance where some lady in a parking lot, some like middle-aged woman, I was like there to get a bagel and I was like heading to my car or something. And she calls over to me, like says hi to me. I don't even know who she is. And then tells me, I made a New Year's resolution to bend over 50 times a day. It's just something really weird and random. And I looked at her like, what? And I glanced away. And when I looked back, she's gone. And there was no way she had time to go anywhere. But it happened. It was very real. I know I didn't imagine it. I'm not somebody who hallucinates. So I don't know what's going on. Is that like a bleed through from another parallel timeline? Is it she's just completely fake? I mean, is it a glitch? I don't know what that was.
Yes, it could have been one of those people that you weren't supposed to walk up to or see. But that does remind me of the Man in Black or the Men in Black experiences that people have where they see the Men in Black, turn away, look back again, they're gone. Carla Turner, Dan Aykroyd have both witnessed that experience.
Right. I mean, from what I understand of what I've read about the Men in Black situation, like what you're just describing, is that they're basically energy projections from another realm. And as such, they have a limited amount of time. It's almost like a battery that can run out. So they're projected into this reality, which is why they don't act real. I mean, they're just bizarre acting. I mean, you know the stories. John Keel wrote about it, too, and in Mothman Prophecies. But they act very strange, robotic almost, and then they just seem to just disappear. It's like, whoop, battery ran out, and then poof, they're gone. So that seems to be what's happening possibly in that situation.
Well, in terms of the nature of reality, it reminds me of something called the Red Queen effect. And it was derived from a statement that the Red Queen made to Alice in Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass in her explanation of the nature of Looking Glass Land. Now, she says, now here, you see, it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. Well, it's an evolutionary hypothesis which proposes that organisms must constantly adapt, evolve, proliferate, not merely to gain reproductive advantage, but also simply to survive while pitted against ever-evolving opposing organisms in an ever-changing environment. The idea is that when you get to the outer envelope of reality, something is going to be there in place to create an obstacle for you to find that edge. So you really won't have the validation or the proof or the evidence. There will be something there. So you may not ever get to wave your hand through the backdrop person unless you can see auras.
I agree. It kind of actually ties into the idea of interference. It's I have an article I wrote called Interference, and it kind of peripherally touches on that idea, which is maybe one of the things that can happen with interference is when you're getting close to figuring out things, you know, there might find some obstacles in your path to try to get in the way of that.
Has that happened to you?
I think, yeah. You'd mentioned the Truman Show earlier, and you really see that, like, in the movie, they show that, like, really, like, the second, you know, Truman's trying to get to the bottom of things, just the most crazy obstacles start happening. I can't say I had anything, like, to that level, but I think, you know, just minor interference that tries to prevent you from getting proof. Or, I mean, there was one time Tom had set up a webcam to see if we could film things that might be going on in the middle of the night for, like, abductions, and the power decides to glitch and keep going out like 6 times that night.
Wow.
And it normally didn't ever happen, but the night he sets up a webcam and we might be able to finally get some proof, start filming, it's just over and over and over and over and over. It was like trying to prevent that. So I kind of have like maybe minor examples of that in my own life.
Well, all right. So the Truman Show, one of a number of films to talk about here that reference a lot of layers that can be analyzed, such as the mass surveillance, right? Voyeur culture, reality TV, and then the backdrop reality and the backdrop people who were important in the orchestration of the fake reality. They had the fake moon in that film. That was the headquarter place where the show was being directed. And it had a lot of hidden occult symbolism in the film as well, if you look closely. All right, so these types of backdrop people were actually in on it. And is there such a thing in real experiences as a backdrop person in on the game?
You know, there may be. Anything's possible. I don't have personal experience or proof of any sort of situation where I've encountered people who were knowingly in on some sort of a plot, like what you see in the Truman Show. Though, you know, people who claim to be victims of gang stalking and targeting, for instance, think that's what's happening to them. And I've definitely heard from people over the years since I wrote an article about that, and telling me that they really truly believe that there are people out there that are knowingly in on this thing that's happening to them. But I think in many situations, what could be happening is that people are being nudged and manipulated by stuff, you know, these various forces that are at work in our reality to do and say things to people that are uncanny in their timing, or which are unbelievably synchronistic. So it winds up looking like they must somehow be in on it, though they very well may not be. They could just be a weakened consciousness that's highly vulnerable and susceptible to this type of manipulation. And like I said earlier, I have, you know, written a couple articles that touched on this idea, the gang stalking article, and then the other one called Being Out of the Flow. And it just gets into the idea of how one's own personal frequency and thoughts and vibes are helping to manipulate one's reality around them in positive, negative ways, and in which includes the kind of people you're drawing into yourself and the experiences that you're having. And I tend to think that might be more of what's happening versus people being knowingly in on it. Because actually, I've had situations where I have acted in a way that was synchronistic to somebody else where they swore I was in on something, you know? So I've been on both ends of it. I have encountered people who, God, you would swear like they have to know something, because why would they say something like that? You know, it's just, it's uncanny. Like what makes them say something like that? So as somebody who's been on both sides of it, I have concluded that I just think it's these other forces more so than the idea that there's syndicates of people that are all like working together to be in on something like what you see in the Truman Show.
And I think Dolores Cannon was referencing that idea that the backdrop people were in on it, right? Is that...
Suzette was the name of the lady that she regressed. I don't recall seeing Suzette ever say that they were knowingly in on it.
Okay.
I don't recall that.
All right, so that might not necessarily be a particular category of the backdrop people, but the reference in the film was glaring, and it does cover a lot of different areas, but it's really important to look at as well. Another film that you had pointed out to me as well, the film The Matrix, the first one. And I noticed that the backdrop people were shown to be part of a Matrix simulation program. And there was also that reality glitch when the main character, Neo, watched as a cat walked by twice as if in a loop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the glitches in The Matrix, yeah.
What type of reality glitches have you experienced in your research?
Well, I mean, the biggest ones involve me basically still being alive when I should be dead, and not to all of a sudden kind of veer things onto a really negative, serious tone. But, you know, I talk about some of these in my website. I have a section, it's called Glitches, where I talk about reality glitches, and I give a few examples of my own and have links to other people's work where they discuss their glitches. In my free ebook, which you can get on my website, Miscellaneous Stories of the Weird and Unusual, I get into it as well. But it's just, I just have some instances where I should have died and glitches happened with reality, so I'm still here, basically. One of them that I mentioned in my glitches write-up, I was in a car. It was being driven by my brother. So this was early 2000. We were heading on the 5 freeway south. We were coming back from L.A. to Orange County, and we hit the interchange of the 91 freeway, which at that time was experiencing construction. So there was the off-ramp for, like, the exit to get on the 91 was on the left side of the freeway, which is unusual. But there's a concrete divider, like forms a point, you know, dividing the exit from the rest of the 5 freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, he's cruising along at 70 miles an hour, and the freeway, you know, all of a sudden had this exit, and he wasn't paying attention. And so I'm staring out the front of the car, and I see this concrete barrier point right in front of the hood of the car. I didn't even have time to emotionally react, to be full of panic or anything. It happened so fast. And all of a sudden the car just moved over to the side, which is physically impossible. You're going 70 miles an hour. If you were to turn the wheel, you would lose control of your car. I mean, to jerk it that quickly, because it was right in front. There was no time, really. The car just moved over. And then we were just where we were supposed to be, back on the 5 freeway, instead of going right into the pointy barrier. And then it started to hit me like, oh, my God. And I looked at my brother, and he was looking at me just bug-eyed, and we didn't say a word for the rest of the trip home. We just didn't talk about it at all. And I finally broached it with him like months later. He just didn't even want to talk about it. Because something seriously really weird happened. Even he knew it. He just didn't want to talk about it. And this was a kid who wasn't afraid of anything and would talk about anything. But for some reason, that kind of freaked him out.
This is the end of the first part of the interview with Carissa Conti, author of the book Chasing Phantoms. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady.